Don't you get me?
On this episode of the Press Rewind Prince Lyrics podcast, we're covering the Prince version of Sheila E.'s 1984 smash hit, The Glamorous Life. And joining me on this episode is Karen Shedrick. Welcome back to the show, Karen.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. A longtime guest of the show and friend of the pod. So thank you again for joining me. It's been a while since we've chatted on an episode. I don't even remember when we last had an episode together. It's been a minute. But welcome back. I'm doing the songs from the Originals project from 2019, mainly because a lot of those, the vast majority of them, were songs written in the early to mid 80s, which is a time frame, you know, that I've already covered for Prince's official releases. And I've gone all the way up to about 84 for a lot of Prince's, vault material, things that were released on the 1999 Super Deluxe, the Purple Rain Deluxe, and a lot of the other stuff that is unreleased I've covered leading up to about 84. So we're in that time range on the podcast where I felt like doing a lot of these original songs made sense because they were written around the same time as the stuff that I've been covering, including today's song, The Glamorous Life. So, Karen, what is your relationship with this song? I assume you remember when it was released in real time, and when did you become aware that it was an actual Prince composition?
I wasn't aware that it was a Prince composition for years. Never occurred to me that he wrote this song, even though... it sounds a lot like what something that he would record or he would write. So I should have put that together, but it was years before I knew. Yeah.
Yeah. Same. Because I think, like, she was in his periphery around this time, but she wasn't in the Purple Rain film.
Right.
Because she really kind of joined the Prince camp after the filming, but before its release. So it was in that area where, you know, the movie hadn't been released yet, the soundtrack hadn't been released yet, but it was already done filming, so there was no spot for her, obviously, in the filming of the movie. But this whole Glamorous Life project came about pretty quickly and was released pretty quickly. Like, he had songs for her album. Like, when was her album released? I feel like it was released in, like, maybe June of 84 or something like that. And that is before or around the same time as the Purple Rain album. And the Purple Rain album was done, you know, in 83, so way before. So he was really firing off the songs that would end up being on this album at a very, very quick pace to get it out in 84. I'm not sure why he felt like he needed to get this project out so quickly when he had so many other things to work on and promote. The Apollonia 6 album, Time's Ice Cream Castles, and then the whole Purple Rain press cycle and everything that goes around with that. But he felt very inspired by Sheila, I'm assuming, so he wanted to work with her and get something out with her as quickly as he possibly could.
Yeah, when you told me, that we would be talking about The Glamorous Life, I went to Dwayne Tudall's book to see what was written about it there. And he actually started recording this in December of 1983. And maybe you knew, but I also didn't know that on the Originals recording, that was Jill Jones singing with him. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I mean, the Originals project really helped understand the the recording process. And again, I think the way it was described or the way it was kind of assumed is that this was going to probably be an Apollonia 6 song. Mm-hmm. But then he's like, never mind. I've got enough for that. Or maybe the Apollonia 6 project wasn't as inspiring to him as Sheila E. Because, again, he was inspired initially, by Vanity. And then when she left, it's like, well, I got to, keep doing this because I need this for the movie. I just wonder how into the whole Apollonia 6 project, Apollonia 6 group, he really was as soon as that filming of the movie was over. Part of me doesn't think he was all that into it anymore.
That's what I'm thinking. And, he probably, obviously he saw a lot in Sheila. And when you think about her percussions in the song, maybe that's why he was thinking more Sheila E. and less Apollonia 6, so she could really shine in the song. Because when I listened to her recording of the song, there's a lot more percussion, so maybe that was where he was going, what direction he was going in as far as letting her shine more on that song, yeah. That she could do more for the song, I guess.
Well, yeah, for sure. The version we're covering is the Prince version from Originals, which would have been that late December 83 Sunset mm-hmm. Sound recording. That's just basically Prince, Jill on backing vocals, and Larry Williams on saxophone. Mm-hmm. But when he finally decided to give it to Sheila, it was transformed significantly to highlight her talents and kind of showcase her skills, her drumming skills. So, that obviously wouldn't have been part of the song if Apollonia 6. It would have been more like what Prince's version was if it ended up mm-hmm. being an Apollonia 6 song. But because he gave it to Sheila, then it was transformed to fit her skill set.
Right.
So I remember the song very distinctly. I remember watching the video. I remember thinking it was a cool track, but there was nothing about it at the time that screamed, "Oh, this is a Prince song." Mm-hmm. Because a lot of artists, at least in my mind, were starting to incorporate that Minneapolis sound in their music. And so I wasn't really thinking, oh, if it has a Minneapolis sound, therefore it must be a Prince song. I just thought that's the way modern pop music was moving towards. And so I didn't really make the connection. And of course, once Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis had left, they were taking their own version of Minneapolis sound and doing things with that had nothing to do with Prince. So, I wasn't totally wrong. It was just in this particular specific instance, this was a Prince song that I just did not know about.
Mm-hmm. Me neither.
And then when I think I finally got clued into their connection with the Love Bazaar with the off the next album, because Prince was very clearly on that track. His vocals were on it.
Right.
So like, oh, they must know each other. I'm like, yeah, they know each other quite well, actually.
Then and her performance kind of looked princely as well.
Yeah.
After we realized that, like you said, after Love Bazaar came out and we realized that they were, working together. I mean, she kind of took on that persona, I thought, the Prince persona.
Yeah. And also, granted, if people were in attendance of the Purple Rain tour, she was opening mm-hmm. for that. But I wasn't. I was 9 and 10 years old during the Purple Rain tours run, so I was not aware of the opening act. I was in a rural part of Wisconsin, so the tour wasn't coming anywhere within hundreds of miles from me, so it was not on my radar whatsoever. So I didn't make that connection that way. All right, so then, February and March of 84, Sheila adds her drums, her vocals, and by I think June of that year. Let me double check that because I don't like being wrong. Yeah, June. The single was released in May. May of 84. So the single was released ahead of the Glamorous Life album. But the album was released in June of 84. So about a month ahead of the release of the album, they released the lead single, which was the title track. Mm-hmm. So very quick turnaround, very quick turnaround. And then it's also noted, as I mentioned, with Larry Williams on saxophone, that's, I guess, the first official recording, Prince-related recording, that has a live saxophone on it. I don't know if you knew that.
I didn't know that until I read about it, but that's huge. That's very huge.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Saxophone became an enormous part of Prince's sound moving forward. But he just didn't have the, prior to this, he didn't have the musicians, or just used synthesizer sounds to mimic horns. But once he got a live saxophonist in the studio to help him flesh out some of the sounds he was wanting to create, then from there it was like, well, I always have to have one of these in my band now. I need this from now on, whether it's, you know, Eric Leeds or Candy Dulfer or whomever. There was always going to be somebody that could do that for the most part in his career, could provide that sound for him. Okay, so that's Glamorous Life, a little bit background on the Glamorous Life. Big hit in 84 for Sheila. It's probably still her most widely recognized single. I think I personally like A Love Bizarre better. If I'm thinking, like, what's my favorite Sheila E. single of all time, mm-hmm. I think I would have to pick A Love Bizarre, but The Glamorous Life is a great song. I never really get tired of hearing it. Do you like it still? Did you like it then?
I liked it then, especially when I saw the video. That just made me notice the song a lot more. I thought it was a good song. I mean, I do think Love Bizarre was probably better for me too, and it's probably because Prince was on it.
If we're being honest.
Yeah. But you know, I thought it was a good song to introduce her to the public, you know, a good first song for her. I thought it was good. Not necessarily great, but good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah, it's it was very popular. We'll just put it that way. Like, when you mm-hmm. hear, if you're going to hear a Sheila E. song on the radio today, it's either going to be this one or Love Bizarre, 9 times out of 10.
And like you said, you know, to see her perform it live, you know, it's really something to see. Like, she, over the years, you know, like you said, it's become like synonymous with Sheila E. So when she performs it live, it's like really, you know, it's usually a great performance when she does it. So I think that helps as well.
Yeah, she's a great performer. She genuinely is. That's never been a weakness of Sheila's, is her performing ability. That's absolutely on track and one of her strengths, absolutely. Live performance. And having that stage presence and being able to do what she does proficient.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but we're talking about the Prince version, so we're not going to get too... I mean, granted, the versions are very similar from a lyrical standpoint. It's just a lot more instrumentation towards the end of Sheila's song that isn't on Prince's version. But nonetheless, he sings it the same way. So again, it was a guide vocal intended for a woman, whether it was going to be Apollonia singing it, Brenda singing it, or Sheila singing it. I don't know who was going to sing it, if it was going to be an Apollonia 6 song. So I said either Apollonia or Brenda, but chances are I was going to be one of those two. Susan really didn't do as much true singing as the other two did.
She wears a long fur coat of mink, even in the summertime. Everybody knows from the coy little wink, the girl's got a lot on her mind. She's got big thoughts, big dreams, and a big brown Mercedes sedan. What I think this girl, she really wants to be in love with.
She wears a long fur coat of mink, even in the summertime. Everybody knows from the coy little wink, the girl's got a lot on her mind. She's got big thoughts, big dreams, and a big brown Mercedes sedan. What I think this girl she really wants is to be in love with a man. Okay, so this is kind of like, again, a story song. It's starting off that way, at least. You know, Prince is introducing a subject and telling it from a third-person perspective. And it sounds like it's going to be a little, maybe a bit of a fable song with a moral that we're going to hear at the end of the story. And so this, what I'm getting from this first verse is it's going to be about a woman who likes material things, or at least is wealthy enough to have material things. But the line, she wears a long fur coat of mink, even in the summertime, kind of tells me that she she likes to show off a bit. Like, there's absolutely no reason to wear a fur coat in the summertime, unless you're just wanting to show that you have wealth and you have, you know, very expensive material goods. She drives an expensive car. She's got big thoughts and big dreams. So maybe like that means she is, you know, she's a go-getter, you know, she's not a passive person in her life. She takes an active role in her own life and in her own wealth and what she has and what she wants. But that those last two lines of the first verse, what I think this girl, she really wants is to be in love with a man. That is, to me, it's kind of trying to tell us that maybe this is all just a front. Like, she's just pretending, or maybe it's overcompensating a bit. I have all these things, but I don't have maybe what I really want, which could be a person to share all of this with. I don't know. Do I have the same kind of thoughts on the first verse as you do, Karen, or do you have a different perspective on what he's trying to say here?
I agree. I mean, I think that she's trying to replace, you know, money and possessions and the glamorous life because she doesn't have a man, you know, and that's at the heart of what she wants for herself. And she may be putting herself out there in that way, thinking that's what she's going to get. You know, if I present myself with the mink and the car and the whole persona, that I can get that man. So, yeah, I agree. I think that was a good, that's the only way I can look at it, you know, that, and he made it plain that that's what he thinks about her. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the thing about this song that's always kind of made me wonder a little bit is this person actually wealthy? Does this person actually have a lot of things, or do they just have enough that they can pretend and make it look like they have a lot of things in order to attract maybe a wealthy man who thinks that, you know, he's going to be with somebody who has sophisticated tastes or sophisticated approach towards life and sophisticated friends and maybe living in that inner circle that he would be running around in, you know, putting herself in a position where she can attract a well-to-do man as well. I don't know. I don't necessarily get that for sure on this first verse, but when I've listened to this song over the many, many years, I've always kind of wondered, is she actually wealthy or is she just pretending to be?
I was thinking she actually was. Because he went into detail about what she has. So I still thought the way that you did, that, you know, she was trying to replace these things with the fact that she didn't have love in her life. But I actually bought it. I thought she really was.
Yeah, yeah. And I probably do more times than not. I just sometimes question when I listen to it too deeply, whether or not she actually does, or if she's just trying to, like I said, put herself in a place where she can attract a wealthy man by showing off the few material goods that she has. Okay, that's fair, though. I think there's no right or wrong answer, obviously, so we're just kind of going with what we have interpreted. And when, you know, you've been listening to a song as long as we have for this one, you know, we're talking 40 years now.
Right.
March of 2024 is when this is being recorded. March of 1984 is when, you know, Sheila was laying down her vocals for this track. So we're at the 40-year mark now, which is kind of scary. But
she wants to leave. Glamorous life she don't need. A man's touch she wants to leave. Glamorous life without love, it ain't much.
All right, so the chorus, she wants to lead the glamorous life. She don't need a man's touch. She wants to lead the glamorous life. Without love, it ain't much.
Mm.
And so, again, I think either interpretation, whether she's wealthy or not, you can kind of take this chorus, or you can find lines in this chorus to support that. Because mm-hmm. the line, she wants to lead the glamorous life, almost makes it sound like she's not quite there. Yeah, she. This is something she's striving for. Her upward mobility has a strong pull for her. She wants to kind of lead a life that she's envisioned or has dreamed about. And she doesn't need a man to do it, but that's also... That flies in the face of what I also just said about her wanting to snag a wealthy man, because that line tells us that no, she wants to lead a glamorous life and she doesn't need a man to do it. So it's kind of almost like an empowering statement. So it's a bit conflicting. What's your take on the chorus, Karen? And I'll tell you mine after you're done.
Well, she may be convincing herself that she doesn't need a man's touch when actually she does, but she still wants to present that persona. And I'm like you, the play on the word wants, you know, she may be striving for that, but she may not exactly be there yet. Doesn't mean that she won't get there, you know, but she may not be there at this point in her life, you know, but she certainly has the goal to be glamorous and to do what's necessary to get there. I still feel like, you know, at some point, if she's not feeling that at the moment, at some point she's going to realize that she needs love as well. And, you know, Prince looking at her already knows, yeah, I see what you look like, I see what you have, but if you don't have love, it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so that's a good point, because we got to remember this is a song being sung by a narrator. It's not mm-hmm. being sung from the perspective of the woman in the song. It's being sung by someone else, by someone, some observer, some third-party observer. So the chorus for me spins a little bit of a different tale than what was just expressed in the first verse, where the last lines are what I think this girl she really wants is to be in the love with the man. Now, granted, it's what I think this girl really wants, not what she wants. What I think she wants mm-hmm. is to be in love with a man. And so then going straight from those lines into the chorus, it could be, again, this narrator saying, this woman is, she thinks she has it all. She wants to lead a glamorous life. And she doesn't, you know, again, she feels like she doesn't need a man's touch. She doesn't need anybody to help support her or, you know, be by her side. She's perfectly fine the way, you know, living the life the way she is, her glamorous life. But again, the narrator doesn't necessarily agree. And instead of saying, what I think is without love, it ain't much, the narrator saying, I don't think that this lifestyle of hers is really fulfilling her. But again, I think it's an opinion. It's opinion of the person who's singing the song. You know, she doesn't need anything besides her possessions and her lifestyle, but the narrator doesn't think that that's true. So it could either be the woman in the song is trying to fool everyone, you know, by living this life that is very glamorous and very possession heavy and very showy. And she might be able, you know, might be fooling herself as well, which you had pointed out that she has it all. But I think the narrator's saying, you know, or judging or casting some aspersions towards this woman for living what she seems to be an empty existence. So there's a little bit of judgment, I think, going on in the song. At least that's what I get.
I agree. I think, you know, not being Prince, but just a man noticing this woman, you know, he might want to give her what she needs, you know, the love that she doesn't have, which is why he's noticing her beauty, you know, the things that she has. But, you know, he may know her on a different level, you know, and say, you know, I know that what you have and how you look, but, you know, you're telling me you don't need a man, but I believe that you do. I believe that you need love in your life. So, you know, he may know her differently than we think. He may actually have a relationship with her, like a communication with her, to know, okay, I see what you're telling other people or what you're showing other people, but I know better, kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, true. Because again, this was going to be sung by a woman. So it could be maybe interpreted that this woman who's singing the song, in this case, Sheila, is a friend. You know, potentially a friend, not just a random observer, but right. Somebody who's somewhat close to this person. And so they might know a bit more about their inner thoughts and inner workings better than just a stranger or even a man. So, you know, again, she might have confided in the narrator of the song about all the things that she has and how great her life is, but her friend knows her well enough to kind of see through that bullshit potentially.
Right. And I just thought about that when you said it, you know, Sheila E. could be the friend.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cause when you look at the video, it looks like it's Sheila E. But then again, it kind of, you know, the way the video is, it breaks to seeing Sheila E. with the glamorous look and then seeing Sheila E. the performer.
Yeah.
So maybe Sheila E. is portraying that woman in that scene versus her doing the performance. I just thought about that. Okay.
Yeah, that is a good point, because in the video, Sheila does play the role of the woman leading the glamorous life.
Right.
But of course, all the lyrics are sung in the third person.
Mm-hmm.
She's not saying, I don't need a man's touch, I want to lead the glamorous life. She's saying she. So it's sung about someone else, not the person singing.
Right.
But she's playing both roles essentially in the video. But that's just because the star of the video is Sheila. It's her song, it's her album, her group. They're not going to cast somebody else in that role of the woman who's all dressed up, all dolled up, you know, has the fur coat and dressed to the nines, but the star of the song. So they really had to kind of take some creative license there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Moving on then to verse 2.
She saw him standing in the section marked. If you have to ask, you can't afford a lingerie. She threw him bread and said, make me scream. In the dark, what could he say? Boys with small talk, small minds, really don't impress me in bed. She said, I need a man's man, baby. Diamonds and furs, love would only conquer my head. She wants to leave.
She saw him standing in the section marked, if you have to ask, you can't afford it, lingerie. She threw him bread and said, make me scream. In the dark, what could he say? Boys with small talk and small minds really don't impress me in bed. She said, I need a man's man, baby, diamonds and furs. Love would only conquer my head. Verse 2 is interesting to me. It's you know, expanding the story a bit. Now she's actually encountering a man in a lingerie store or some department store or something like that in the lingerie section. And I think it's clever. It's the section is marked, "If you have to ask, you can't afford it, lingerie." which is a funny little way of saying really expensive lingerie, fancy expensive lingerie area. So I'm just like, if I'm just envisioning what's going on in this scene, there's this guy in this expensive lingerie section of this department store, just standing there, maybe looking, trying to shop for whomever, or maybe just admiring what he sees. And she comes along the line, "She threw him bread and said, 'Make me scream.'" Like, she's just giving him money and saying, what is she doing here? Is she giving him money to tell him to buy her lingerie? Like, "Here's some money, buy me this lingerie." Is that, am I interpreting that correctly, Karen? What are you getting from that line?
Okay. I may be way off, but I was thinking the man worked in the lingerie store and she threw money at him to pay for the lingerie and said, "Make me scream," which doesn't make sense. And maybe laughed at him, you know, like, thinking that he's a small guy, you know, thinking about how he would be in bed, or maybe they actually did, you know, go to bed together. But I was thinking he was actually someone in the store, like, because she paid for the lingerie, you know, through.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. You know, I see what you're saying. And then
money, like, she threw money at him for the lingerie, but the whole make me scream part, I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah, so implies that they went off and had sex, right?
You know, that's what I'm thinking. He worked in the store, you know, she paid for the lingerie, and then they went and had sex, but she realized, you know, he's small in talk and mind, and he can't give her what she wants, essentially.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, your interpretation is way more likely, Karen. I don't know what I was thinking. I don't... Because standing there in the section marked, so I wasn't envisioning an employee, I guess, because more times than not, I seem to, and this is a stereotype, I'm not buying lingerie a ton, but not these days anymore, but I tend to find women working in lingerie stores, not men, but that absolutely makes 1,000 times more sense than my interpretation.
So I
think we got to go with it.
So what did you get when she says she saw him standing, or Prince, she saw him standing in the section marked?
No, I was thinking he was just another guy, like, shopping. Like, he was just another shopper shopping for lingerie. And she saw him, and because originally I was thinking because he was in an expensive area of the store buying expensive lingerie, that maybe she's like, okay, this guy's probably got money, right? Because why would he be in the "if you have to ask, you can't afford it" lingerie section? So maybe he's got money, so I'm going to try to pick him up, like, and use my funny technique of throwing money at him and saying, "Make me scream," to pick him up. But as an employee, it makes sense as well, because the money part makes sense, because she's buying something, maybe something that she's going to wear if he says yes when she says, "Make me scream."
Right.
So I think your interpretation makes more sense than mine, thinking that he was just somebody who was shopping that she was trying to pick up. But leading past that, going past that and getting to the boys with small talk and small minds really don't impress me in bed. Mm-hmm. You know, either one of those scenarios, whether it's interpreted as a worker that she picks up, or just another man in the lingerie store that she picks up, from the second half of the verse on, it could be either way. You know, there's no, I don't really see anything in there that points to it definitively being one or the other.
Oh, and I just thought of this too. It could have just been some guy she, like you said, some guy she picked up in the store and she paid him for sex.
I thought about that too, but I'm like, wow, that's kind of bold. Like, why would she need to? Because that would, I don't know. I mean, I thought about that, you know, giving him money and said, make me scream. Right. That does kind of imply that she paid somebody to have sex with her. But why would she do that? The character in this song.
Because she can.
Because she can, yeah.
Right.
Yes. No better reason than she can, because she's living that glamorous life where she's got all the money in the world that she can spend on whatever she wants. But at the end of the day, this encounter appears to be unfulfilling.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, she's like, the line, boys with small talk and small minds don't impress me in bed. So that either means that this boy that she picked up, however she did, has small talk and small minds, or she's saying, she's just maybe telling him what she is looking for. Like, if you're a man with small talk and small mind, you're not going to impress me. I need a man's man, baby, diamonds and furs. Love will only conquer my head. So again, this is, again, telling me she's looking for somebody that has some financial acumen, like has that bank account,
right,
that can also match hers if she's really rich indeed, or if she is, again, I think this line is another line that made me think possibly she's just pretending she has money, because if she has her own funds and she's independently wealthy, why does she need her man to provide her diamonds and furs? I don't know. It's a little bit confusing to me. What is it she's really wanting? I don't know, Karen.
Well, she says a man's man, so maybe she thinks that a wealthy man is better than a man who doesn't have money, even if she has her own. And, you know, assuming she threw money at this guy, she has her own money, but maybe, you know, like I said, she's attracted to a man with money because she thinks that's a more powerful man, like a man's man, more powerful than, you know, a man who doesn't.
Yeah.
And I feel too, the whole thing about, you know, she has the glamorous life, but she doesn't have love. You know, maybe, you know, even though it was probably more sex than love, she was looking for some type of intimacy or connection in that moment and realized, okay, I still need the glamorous life. I still need him to be this type of man.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's kind of why I think I like your interpretation better, that she saw an attractive man at the lingerie store, you know, the really expensive lingerie store, probably the somebody who's working there. So, you know, not making, you know, as big of a salary as she's looking for, but she found him attractive, bought her lingerie, told, in essence, you know, in not so many words, I want you to come home with me. And he agreed because, you know, she's beautiful and she's rich.
Mm-hmm.
But then she realizes, like, this still isn't what I want. You know, this isn't what I was looking for. It's not fulfilling. And I'm going to blame it on you not being rich as the reason why it's not fulfilling me. You know, I need a man's man, diamonds and furs, and you can't provide that because you're working in a lingerie store for whatever salary you're making. It's not going to be able to afford what I want. And at that moment, she might, you know, again, trying to convince herself she doesn't need this stuff, but she's realizing that she kind of does. Like, she's losing the battle in convincing herself whether that she doesn't really need love, potentially. So, again, I think I talked myself into agreeing with your interpretation, Karen. So, again, that's the beauty of doing the show with somebody else when I can do it, especially for a song that I've heard 1,000 times, like Glamorous Life, that I've never quite fully grasped what's going on with all of these lines and all these lyrics. Anything else with the second verse you wanted to call out?
No, I think we pretty much, we covered it from many angles. So I think
we probably overanalyzed it. Maybe would be one way to, to talk about it. The second chorus is the same. She wants to lead the glamorous life. She don't need a man's touch. She wants to lead the glamorous life. Without love, it ain't much. Okay, so then we get the next set of new lyrics, and it's continuing the story.
They made haste in a brown sedan, they drove to 55 Secret Street. They made love by the seventh wave. She knew she had a problem. She thought real love is real scary. Money only pays the rent. Love is forever.
They made haste in the brown sedan. They drove to 55 Secret Street. They made love, and by the seventh wave, she knew she had a problem. She thought real love is real scary. Money only pays the rent. Love is forever, and that's all your life. Love is heaven sent. It's glamorous. All right, so now we get a little more about what we have to assume is probably a continuation of this encounter from the lingerie section of the department store. So they take off in their brown sedan, 55 Secret Street. You know, I don't know why it has to be a secret. Unless she's having an affair. That's another way to think of it. Yeah. Like maybe she's in a loveless marriage or a loveless relationship. Because Secret Street, living or going to Secret Street, kind of implies that there's maybe a, you know, an affair going on or something that needs to stay quiet. She's not bringing him back to her place. I don't think she lives on 55 Secret Street.
No.
So they had sex, and by the seventh wave, she knew she had a problem. So I interpret this to mean maybe like the seventh time they've had sex, or her seventh orgasm, or something along those lines.
Right.
Okay, so you're on the same page?
Yes.
It's okay. So saying that she had a problem at this point maybe is her way of thinking again. Like, if she's been resisting this idea that she actually needs love to you know, exist in this world, and granted, she just met this guy. Just because maybe he's good and bad, does that equal love? I don't think so, and I don't think we're supposed to interpret that. But maybe she's, for whatever reason, falling for him a little bit, or maybe she's addicted to the feelings that he's giving her, because that's what I get from she knew she had a problem. Like, her problem is, I am liking this too much,
mm-hmm.
And I'm liking him maybe too much, more than what I wanted or needed. And it's starting to scare me a little bit, because real love is real scary.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Money is what she's been, again, living off of. And the idea of this lifestyle that she has to live or wants to live doesn't include love. And now she's maybe starting to feel a little bit of that attachment and intimacy with this lingerie guy. and it's frightening her a little bit. To me, she's like I said, liking him too much a bit, and she's not really ready for that kind of commitment. Maybe because she's in a committed relationship already, or she is just wanting to continue to portray that independent woman. What do you think about this third verse, Karen?
Well, now that you put a whole spin on it, the fact that she's in a relationship, that's a very good scenario as well, because, you know, her husband may be the one who is keeping her in this glamorous life, and she doesn't want to give that up because she loves that. She meets this regular guy, and she's developing feelings for this guy, and she's starting to realize that money is not everything. That, you know, you have to have love, I don't know about love also, but love period, you know, to have a fulfilling life, in other words, or a happier life. So, yeah. And yeah, you know, it could just be that she's, you know, having all this good sex and she's thinking, okay, you know, I got a problem because I'm liking the sex, but I like the fact that it's that he put in here, you know, love is forever. That's all your life. Love is heaven since it's glamorous. So love is glamorous in this case, not just money. So I like that he put that spin on love, that love is glamorous as well. It can be glamorous just like money can be glamorous. But yeah, mm-hmm. I think she's starting to realize that money is not everything.
Yeah. Yep, yeah. That's exactly what I get as well. And and love is forever, that's all your life. Love is heaven sent, it's glamorous. It seems to be the moral of the story. If we're going to call this song a fable, that's what I would say is the song's moral, that love is more important than money, and that's the glamorous part, that you can live a glamorous life with love only.
Mm-hmm.
if you take the word at a different meaning than its more traditional meaning. And so that's, again, I think that's the moral of the story. And then if you take that, those lines, and then kind of reapply to the rest of the song, I think the interpretation of a woman whose life looks great on the outside, looks like she's got it all, whether she's single or married or, you know, in a relationship, either way, she seems to have everything in life, and she's defiantly living that life. And defiantly resisting the idea that love is important because she doesn't have it. So it's kind of like one of those things where if you can convince yourself that what you don't have is not important, then you don't ache for it. And I think she's been, and again, either interpretation, single or married in a loveless relationship, can be interpreted that way, where she's like, I've got everything I need. I don't need love. Every once in a while, I might want to pick up somebody working at a lingerie store for a quick encounter because, you know, I'm a human being and I need this. I need sex. I need intimacy, even if it's just fleeting or for the moment. But at the end of the day, you know, you're not what I'm looking for. I need somebody that can provide me or help me maintain my glamorous lifestyle. Glamorous in the definition that, you know, she's been using for herself for all this time, but this person has kind of flipped her around and flipped her mindset around to thinking, okay, now I'm finally feeling something else inside that is not, you know, related to possessions or wealth, and now I've got a problem because I got to deal with this. I got to deal with these emotions. I got to deal with this feeling. And potentially I've got to deal with the fact that I'm in a relationship, if you take that interpretation, and kind of assess what I want to do with that. Do I want to leave my husband for this lingerie store worker because he makes me feel good? Or do I want to continue to live and maintain my lifestyle and not enjoy the love that is potentially in front of me right here.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of like my 2-second summary of what I think the song is saying. Again, I don't think that is a definitive version of the song. So that was my summary, Karen. Do you have a vastly different summary?
Not vastly different. You know, the where it says she knew she had a problem, I think that's it. She realized, okay, this is not working. You know, I'm developing love feelings that go beyond money. And I'm starting to realize that I need love as well. You know, mm-hmm. so I do believe that she's kind of having an epiphany about her life. And that's a problem because she still loves the glamorous life. So she's in a pickle. You know, what do I do here? You know, because I'm finding out that love is, in her mind, love is just as important to her now as money.
Yeah.
So she's got to make a choice, or either keep doing what she's doing. You know, that's the way I look yep. at it. We're on the same page.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of those songs where if you just take each verse on its own, it might not tell you the whole story. But I mean, again, as I let off, this is kind of like a story song, and you don't just read a chapter in a book and then inform an opinion on a book based off of one chapter. You got to read the whole thing and then decide for yourself what your opinion is on the theme, or, you know, what, if you agree with what the author is trying to tell you. Same with a story song. You got to listen to the whole story. And so all three verses really are telling us that story and giving us the ability to interpret it in whatever way we so choose. And so I think we've kind of expressed that. So the rest of the song is really just, you know, reiterating the chorus and repeating that. So there isn't any new lyrics to speak of. So, you know, at the end of the day, that's pretty much The Glamorous Life by Sheila E. But as sung by Prince for the version that I'm covering for this episode. But again, it doesn't matter who's singing the song. The interpretation is the same because Prince didn't write this for himself.
So that was my next question. Did he write it for Sheila E, or did he write the song and then gave it to Sheila E?
I think he wrote the song for Apollonia 6. And again, I don't know if he was going to,
okay.
Apollonia was going to sing it, or Brenda was going to sing it. Probably Apollonia, because, you know, she has that kind of, she can embody the look mm-hmm. of a glamorous one. I mean, no offense to Brenda. Brenda's a beautiful woman too, but mm-hmm. you know, Apollonia was the star of the band.
Right.
So I envisioned, because this is the time that he would have been writing songs for Apollonia 6. Like the filming of Purple Rain was complete. The film itself, they had to do some, you know, inserts and add some music, but the core filming of the movie by just late December of 83 was done. So he's like, okay, well, I got to now work on music, you know, to fill out the music for this movie. We've got Sex Shooter was the only Apollonia 6 song that was featured in the film. If I'm going to put out an album, I got to write a bunch of music for this group. So I think I don't think he ever intended it for himself. And by all accounts, I don't think I would have to go back and see when he officially met Sheila and when they became friends. But by February of 84, they were working together. But I'm not sure by December of 83, they were that in that space where he would have been thinking, I got to write music for this woman. But I don't know that for sure. I don't know that for sure. But I don't think it was written for him.
Okay.
It was going to probably either be for Apollonia 6, or maybe he already had Sheila's vocals in mind for the song too.
I was just looking. There's an interesting comment in Dwayne Tudall's book about who the song was for. If I'm reading it right, Jesse Johnson was saying that the song was for Vanity.
Okay, so maybe it was going to be on Vanity 6's second album until she left the group. But then, but by December of 8, so he might have wrote it. This is where I get a little bit hung up on recording versus writing. Because mm-hmm. we don't know when Prince wrote these songs. All we know is when he went into the studio and laid them down. You know, did basic tracking for them, or did things in the studio, because we've got the studio records to go back to. The studio records for The Glamorous Life, his takes until, you know, he gave it to Sheila to work on in 84,
mm-hmm.
were after Christmas in December. So like December, I don't know, 27th, 28th, something like that of 83. Fannie Mae obviously was already out of the picture by then because she wasn't in Purple Rain movie. And Purple Rain movie was filmed in that fall of 83 in early winter. So if it was written for Vanity, okay, I could buy that. Maybe Prince wrote that in earlier in 83 or summer of 83 before she left with the hopes that it would be on their second, on Vanity 6's second album. But by the time he recorded it, you know, his vocals and the music for it, it wasn't obviously going to be for Vanity anymore.
Right. I think that's what he's saying here. I'm glad you answered that question because I thought he wrote it for someone. He didn't just write the song and then give it to someone, but I just wanted to be sure. Yeah,
it seems like it was kind of an evolution. Like maybe wrote it for Vanity, but then she left and was like, okay, well, guess it's gonna be for Vanity's replacement, which is Apollonia. But then it's like, I've met this other woman who I think is going to embody the song better, and she can, you know, I'm trying to create an album for her, and I'm more excited about that, so I'm going to give, because, sorry, Apollonia 6, but a lot of the best material Prince is writing for other artists around this time were not given to Apollonia 6. Mm-hmm. Manic Monday,
right?
Glamorous Life, two really iconic mid-80s tracks that Prince wrote for other artists that were being looked at for Apollonia 6, but ultimately were not given to them. And again, I just wonder if like he wasn't really that into the project anymore. The Vanity was gone. And he didn't, I hate to use the word waste, but didn't.
Yeah.
And this is going to sound like heavy, heavy shade. And it's not shade at all because I love the Apollonia 6 album. But when you're excited about something, and excited about somebody's talents, genuine talents. Like the Bangles were a genuinely talented group. Sheila E. is a genuinely talented musician and performer and singer. If I'm excited about giving some of my best material to an artist to do their best with and transform it in their way and then take it out into the world and make it something, I'm going to give my best work to people who I think can best embody my vision and execute my vision. And I'm not sure that he thought Apollonia could do that for his vision for these songs in particular, Manic Monday and Glamorous Life. Just my opinion. Anybody can offer a competing opinion or differing opinion or shoot mine down and say you're being mean, because I'm not trying to be mean, but.
Well, it makes sense. I mean, when you write a song, he may or may not have, like you said, have had somebody in mind, and he knows who he's working with, and he knows their strengths, you know, their weaknesses. So, you know, he's going to give it to the person who's going to sing it the best.
Well,
you would think,
right? I mean, because again, these are great songs, and and time has proven that he made the right choice, because both the Bangles and Sheila E. executed his vision for these two songs in particular, I think, flawlessly. Like their versions of Manic Monday and Glamorous Life are brilliant. Like they're the definitive versions, in my opinion. As much as I love Prince's version of Manic Monday, I think the Bangles version is the definitive version. And I think Sheila E.'s version of The Glamorous Life is the definitive version. Mm-hmm. So that's, again, my take on that. Any final thoughts on The Glamorous Life before we check out?
I just think it's an iconic song, and I think he did the right thing giving it to Sheila. I think she's made it her own, and I just think it's a good song. It's an iconic song. I think, for her career. And I do, I'm really glad that they released Prince's version. I like his just as much, if not more. You know, and it could be because he's singing it. I don't know. But I'm really glad that they released his version. Absolutely glad.
Mm-hmm. For sure. More Prince music in the world is never a bad thing, even if it's songs that we already know.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining again, Karen. Appreciate your insight and helping me kind of flesh out a song that I've never really fully grasped the lyrics to.
Mm-hmm.
The video kind of tells you a story, and then the lyrics tell you another story, and then the way you listen to it and the way you interpret it can vary from time to time. So, and certainly mine has. So I think I now have a version of the story that is The Glamorous Life in my mind that will now become my canon until somebody comes along and says, like, no, Jason, this is, I think you got it wrong, and then like blows my mind or something. I don't know if that'll ever happen, but because the man himself can't tell us. So we're just going to have to go with opinions, I guess, from now on.
Yeah. The only other person who could, well, I was going to say the only person who could give a different take on it would be Sheila E, but Prince wrote it. So only he would know ultimately what he was trying to portray in the song. So,
exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Even though she recorded it and made it her own, he wrote it. So
right.
It's came out of his brain.
Right.
All right. Well, great. Again, thank you so much. Anything you want to share with the listeners about where to find you? It's okay if no.
I don't have, I'm on all the platforms, but I don't post very often. So it's probably no.
Okay. That's fine. It's absolutely fine. Yeah. All right. So this has been the Press Rewind Prince Lyrics Podcast. I've been your host, Jason Brenninger. You can find the show at pressrewind.net, where it's kind of the host site where I can keep all the episodes. If you want to just go there to find them and listen to them. Otherwise, you can listen to the show using any of your podcast catchers. I'm on social media, but like Karen, I don't post a lot anymore. I used to post more when I was first starting the show, but I lost a lot of my content when my Facebook and Instagram, since they're connected, my accounts got locked out and hacked a little over a year ago now, and I lost a lot of momentum there. So I kind of lost my desire to do significant social media posting, but I do enough to just keep a presence. So if you want to check me out on any of those, Facebook, Instagram, X, Threads, and I have the show on YouTube. So if you like listening to the show on YouTube, it's not going to have any of the actual music that, you know, from the artist that we're covering, because YouTube flags that stuff very quickly and easily and doesn't let me post. So I got to scrub all that out. But if you like to listen to podcasts on YouTube, I'm on there as well. And until next time, thank you very much for listening and goodbye. She wants to leave.